Actually, some aspects of our study have similar conclusions to the previous presentation. Special local taxing districts in the state of Florida have been in operation since about the 1920s, and a local special taxing district involves a decision at the sub-county level by a geographically defined jurisdiction to be able to create a tax authorization for a special purpose. Now, in Florida, as you'll find out in a couple of moments, there are a number of different kinds of health-related special taxing districts, but there are also dozens and dozens of other kinds of special taxing districts in the state for water resources, for sports authorities, for highway construction, etc. So it's something that the state has used for a long time, the assumption being that the dollars that are needed for this special purpose are simply not available from federal, state, or in this case, county sources. And so the special taxing district gets a special tax authorization, and it's usually levied using an addition to the ad valorem property taxes in the state. The taxing district, we're interested in taxing districts for two reasons. One related to the impact of the taxing district on the financial status of the county in regard to health investments and health expenditures, and then also in our major interest, something we've been studying for a number of years, does any of this have any impact on the health status of populations residing inside these areas? Kind of a long-winded introduction. We did a previous study in using data from the years 1992 to 96. In that study, we just segmented Florida's 67 counties into two groups, those that had active taxing districts and those that didn't. We didn't have any really detailed financial information available then, so it wasn't included in the original study. I shouldn't say it wasn't available. It was always available. It's so difficult to get the data out of the state and reconcile the various state accounting systems that in the first study, we really didn't have the resources available to be able to trace dollars. The new study, the study that you're going to see some of the preliminary results from today, we tracked all health-related tax-funded expenditures in the county, not just public health, all health-related tax-funded expenditures from any source, any and every source, federal, state, local combinations. We also, in this study, organized our counties by activity levels of the health-related special taxing districts, and you'll see that in a few moments. We also decided in this study that we were going to ask the question about whether or not the investment represented by these taxing districts had a differential racial effect. In other words, did it affect favorably the white population more than it affected favorably the black population? So we were interested in trying to parcel out the relative influence of this investment and resources on racial subgroups inside the county. And of course, we used updated data, 6 years of data from 2000 to 2005. I'm going to run briefly through this maze of all of the state and county accounts that we utilized in order to do this. I must say that the state officials have been extraordinarily cooperative. The Florida state officials were extraordinarily cooperative. Want to make the point that as far as hospital revenues and expenditures are concerned, if we included the hospital money in this analysis, it would make everything that we describe here seem small by comparison. So we're only looking at hospital expenditures in terms of net expenditures. In other words, if a specific hospital had an operating deficit and that deficit was made up by some public source, those net expenditures are what are included in public health expenditure or healthcare expenditures in our analysis. And then also in terms of revenues, we also looked at grants. Now, when we talk about federal grants, state grants, and state shared grants here, we're not talking about the sort of categorical programs or block grants or formula grants that many of you are familiar with in terms of financing health and public health-related activities. These are separate from that. Those block grant and formula grant dollars are rolled into the health expenditures for each one of the counties. So when we did this, we used the individual county as a unit of analysis, and we integrated or rolled up into the county data data from the various municipalities and the various taxing districts. These are all accounting entities. I'm illustrating Broward County here. Broward County has two special taxing districts, one in the North Broward Hospital District in the north part of the state, in the county, and one in South Broward in the southern part of the county. It has Fort Lauderdale as a municipality, as a city, and some other smaller municipalities, each one of which is a separate accounting entity. In order to do this analysis, we had to reconcile all of this information and roll it up so that we had complete information, financial information available at the county level, and that's what we work from. The taxing districts in the state of Florida, there are four different types. The first is what we call a health care or indigent care taxing district, in many ways the most interesting and the most heterogeneous, because a lot of these dollars get used for primary care programs, for example. And so there are 34 counties that have a total of 28 health care indigent care special districts. There's the hospital or health facility special taxing district, and that is those are usually dollars that are raised to make up the operating deficits for a public hospital. And there are 36 of those in 30 counties. And then there are Children's Health Services, special taxing district for Children's Health Services, 9 of those in each of 9 counties, and Emergency Medical Services. So there's a total of 85 special health care taxing districts inside the state of Florida. All right, now what we did is we took those counties and we organized them into tiers based on their taxing district activity. So we had 10 counties that have multiple taxing districts. They average about 4 to 5 taxing districts apiece. All of their taxing districts are active. In other words, they're authorized to collect tax dollars and they are collecting them. In Tier 3, we have a group that is authorized to collect special taxes, but they're not active. They're not using the taxation to collect any revenue. So we have 10 Tier 1 counties. At the second tier, we have 9 counties we call these single district counties. These are usually a single hospital-related special taxing district to raise monies to support a public hospital, to make up the operating deficits of a public hospital. And then we have all of the other, both those that have taxing authority but don't use it, and those that don't have any taxing authority are all in Tier 3, and there are 48 counties. Just to give you an idea, roughly, in those 10 counties, as you'll see a little later, they're large. About 50% of the population of Florida is in the Tier 1 counties. About 55%. Another 45% of the population of Florida is in the Tier 3 counties, in those 48 counties, and only 5% of the population is in the Tier 2 counties. The Tier 2 counties tend to be small, they tend to be rural, and they represent 5% of the state's population. Give you some idea demographically of what these tiers look like, and again, you can see the Tier 1 counties are these large, major, metropolitan area counties averaging nearly 1 million. Miami-Dade, for example, has 3 million people now, 60% Hispanic. Some of the other large counties would be Broward, Palm Beach. Counties like that are these, we call them Tier 1 or multiple taxing district counties. Tier 2 counties are the smallest in terms of average population, and as you look at that, you can see they're the poorest, the highest proportion of people in poverty. All right, just talk a little bit about some of what we find financially inside these counties. We think this is kind of interesting. Now, we're going to look at total expenditures as well as health care expenditures, okay? So, one of the things that you can see right away, of course, if you look at total health expenditures, the Tier 1 counties are, if you look at per capita health care costs, the Tier 1 counties spend about $137 per person. The Tier 2 counties, $101 a person, and the Tier 3 counties, $70 per person. want to call your attention again to this grants again. You'll note that the Tier 1 counties average, those 10 counties average over $7 million in grants. And even though it represents really a very, very small proportion of the total expenditures inside the county, one of the things that we're finding is that these county dollars are markers for good health status for many, many outcomes. Where we didn't find relationships, for example, between per capita health expenditures or the proportion of health expenditures to total expenditures, where we didn't find an association with that in an outcome, we did find an association with this relatively small percentage of dollars that are these special grants. Kind of an interesting finding, and it suggests to us that this whole business about financial investment is not linear, but rather there is some tipping point or some sort of level at which all of the resources come together and you start to see activities inside of a community, and granting successful grant making is one of them, where those activities are having a favorable impact on health. I should also point out here that it's hard to find a health differentiated effect. You will note that these Tier 1 counties spend more money on everything. Okay, it's not just they're overspending in health, and you'll see, for example, in this next slide, if you look at the Tier 1 counties, the proportion of health care to total expenditures is about 5% in the Tier 1 counties, but it's higher in the Tier 2 counties. And generally speaking, there's not a great difference in the proportion that these counties are spending on health relative to other things. But the Tier 1 counties spend massive amounts on everything. They spend more money on education. They spend more money on highways. They're just resource infused. Okay, they're apart, and that's why this is, as I say, when we look at this, we haven't found a linear regression statistic to be very useful, because we think the phenomenon is not a linear phenomenon, generally speaking. This is just a few points to show you the kind of distribution. These are public health expenditures by the various tiers, and you can see Tier 1 counties lined up and the Tier 2 counties and Tier 3 counties, and you can see the Tier 3 counties have a couple of counties that actually have higher per capita health expenditures than the highest Tier 1 counties. And even the Tier 2 counties have at least one of those counties has a higher per capita expenditure. This reminds us, when we look at this, about it has a sense statistically of the same relationship between surgical volume and outcomes, where, yes, generally speaking, the more a surgeon does, the better the outcomes. But you find a number of surgeons who have very, very good outcomes and have low volumes, and you have a number of surgeons who have high volume and poor outcomes. And this is the way when you look at community health status and investment, it has that same feeling about it. This is per capita, county per capita by grant dollars. And again, those grant dollars turn out to be very, very significant in a lot of these analyses. And you can see that there's a tremendous difference in the grant dollars in the Tier 1 counties than either Tier 2 or Tier 3. Although, again, in the Tier 3 group, there are a number of counties that do very well in terms of grant attraction. Just more of the same, I want to get a little bit to the, I want to get to some of the outcomes, which we find very interesting. We've been experimenting with various ways to look at the outcomes, okay? And so, first of all, when you look at the crude, this is just crude death rates, all cause death rate. And you can see, for example, for the white population, that you have the highest mortality rate in Tier 1. And that's because, if you remember from that first slide, it's the oldest. The Tier 1 counties are the oldest counties. So that would make sense for the white population. The black population in the state of Florida, of course, is much, much younger. And even here in the crude mortality, all-cause mortality, deaths per 100,000 population, you can see that even with the crude death rates, the black population seems to have an advantage by being inside Tier 1. I'm going to show you in a minute or two some better ways to look at this data that we're experimenting with, but I wanted to just give you some sense that we've looked at a number of different ways to structure the outcomes. These are preventable hospitalizations. Some of you may be familiar with the construct of preventable hospitalizations, the whole idea being that these are sensitive to access to or the quality of primary care. And you can see that for a series of preventable hospitalizations, pneumonia, congestive heart failure, diabetes, malignant hypertension, that the Tier 1 counties have an advantage. They have fewer of preventable hospitalizations. Generally speaking, sometimes you'll see that the Tier 3 does almost as good as Tier 1, and the real competition here is between Tier 1 and Tier 3. Again, the Tier 2 is an unusual group, as I explained to you, for a number of reasons. Note also, years of productive life lost there. You're probably all familiar with the construct of years of productive life loss as well, but note the tremendous difference in the impact on causes of premature death in the Tier 1 counties, very significantly lower than either Tier 1 or Tier 2 counties. Here we are looking at age-adjusted. This is age-adjusted all-cause death rates. And here you start to see Tier 1, again, differentiating itself a little bit more clearly from Tiers 2 and Tier 3, an advantage for whites and blacks specifically. And then we worked with the indirect method of age adjustment. We like this method for a number of reasons. We like this method because we can use the composition of the Florida population rather than a standardized population, the U.S. population. And we like it because we can work inside the age bands. And we think that when you're interested in trying to find out what actually works in improving the health status of communities, we think you have got to work inside the age bands to get an understanding of what is effective and what isn't effective. And you have to work across multiple outcomes. Mortality outcomes, morbidity outcomes, and others. And we're in the process of doing some of that work now, and I'll show you just a little taste of it. First, sort of interim findings, what we know for sure, these big multiple health taxing district counties are huge, 6 to 10 times the population size. They're older, they're less poor, they're more Hispanic. They have significantly higher per capita health care and total expenditures. They just spend a lot more money. And when you look at the dollars that roll through big counties like Miami-Dade and Broward on an annual basis, the dollars are unbelievable. In the state of, and we didn't even count Medicaid, hospital Medicaid, for example, but Medicaid expenditures account for a fourth of Florida's total state budget, which means that Medicaid spends $20 billion annually in the state of Florida. That's with a B, $20 billion annually for Medicaid hospital expenditures alone. The dollars that get spent in health care are staggering, staggering. So our sense of all of this, again, is, the idea that more money is the answer. When you look at the dollars that are being spent, you have to wonder. Relative disproportionate share of federal, state, and health-related grants going into these multiple district counties. We think the grants are a marker. We don't think it's the money that makes the difference. We think you start to see the difference in health status when you have a number of factors that come together, and that the grant dollars are a marker for all of that. Once you start to see the grant dollars, other good things are happening, and the county is achieving health status advantages. And overall, on average, better health status for multiple morbidity and mortality indicators. Where are we going in the future? We want to isolate the relative effects of financial indicators and taxing district status. We're not at all convinced that this is just a throw the money in and you'll get a result. We don't think it's that, although we do think that there is some tipping point below which, if you don't have enough invested, you can't achieve good health status. But we do find counties inside the state of Florida that are spending fewer dollars and getting good results. We're trying to parcel out what is accounting for all of that. Is it just sort of the natural advantages of the demographics or of the population itself, or is there something really interesting going on? We also want to determine the relative effect of these financial indicators and taxing district status on race-specific incomes. And I want to show you just one to end a little. I mentioned using the standardized mortality ratios as a way to do this, and we think that we like this effort. Those of you who are familiar with standardized mortality ratios, you can see that the Tier 1 standardized mortality ratio in nearly every age group, actually in for the white population, in every age band, are much more favorable than Tier 3. And so that last column is the proportion of the standardized mortality ratio of Tier 1 divided by the standard mortality ratio in Tier 3. And so when that number is under 100%, it's an advantage to Tier 1. So you can see for the white population, in every age band, you see this tremendous advantage for Tier 1. But something interesting happens when you look at the black standardized mortality ratios. Here you see Tier 1 maintains its advantage in the age groups from 0 to 14. But very, very clearly in the age groups from 15 to 44, the Tier 1, whatever's going on in Tier 1 isn't helping. Okay? And so what we think is happening here, and we've looked at the causes of death inside these individual age groups, and remember, this is the black population. So what we think is happening here is you're seeing the ravages of homicide and AIDS mortality in those major metropolitan areas represented by the counties that are multiple taxing district counties. We've also been, so that shows very, very clearly that the Tier 1 investments aren't touching those two of those core problems of the black population in major metropolitan areas. We've been working at this from a number of different perspectives, and we've also discovered that there are some causes of death where there is a taxing district effect, but there are other causes of death where there is not a taxing district effect, meaning that whatever is happening with all of those resources, there's still a differential effect depending upon the outcome of interest. For example, breast cancer doesn't seem to be touched at all by a taxing district effect. There's no Tier 1 advantage for breast cancer in the state of Florida. Why is that? We don't know why it is. There's a huge advantage for prostate cancer, but no advantage for breast cancer. And so what we're trying to do in the future is we're trying to paint a pattern, if you will. We're trying to map the effect of this taxing district effect across a wide variety of health outcomes, both morbidity and mortality. And then when we know which outcomes are affected by the taxing district and which are not, then we think we'll be able to go back and better understand a little bit how the mechanism of the taxing district effect actually works. This is a work in progress. We're going to be continuing this work with data warehouses that we've created in the state of Florida, in the state of California, and also in the state of North Carolina, where we're going to continue this work in some effort. So thank you very much.